हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सनि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So now Nityananda Das is asking questions. So here he's asking, how should a Vaishnava relate to persons of other religions? Haridas, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.26 gives this explanation. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. The Vaishnava religion is the only religion. There is no other religion but that. The other religions that are present in this world are either steps in the staircase leading to Vaishnava religion or else perverted reflections of the Vaishnava religion. When other religions are steps leading to the Vaishnava religion, these religions should be appropriately honored. When their religions are perverted reflections of the Vaishnava religion, one should ignore them, and without malice or envy, place his thoughts on the truths of devotional service. In this way, one should avoid attacking other spiritual paths. When his auspicious day comes, the follower of another religion will naturally become a Vaishnava. Of this, there is no doubt. So this Bhagavatam quote then those who are serious about liberation are non-envious and they respect all because everybody is all part and parcel of Krishna, so everybody must be respected. This aspect has to be there. It means as human beings they're respected or whatever it is. But that doesn't mean necessarily their philosophy is something interesting. So if one's rejecting the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods, then only worshipping the Supreme Lord, let alone something less, that is the thing, is that if something within the Vedic culture is left, and let alone then something that is on a much lower, that is outside of the Vedic culture. So therefore they are not interested in these things. At the same time, it doesn't mean the person who is following that is disrespected. This is the important thing. Now, if what they're following are steps leading towards the Vaishnava religion, then it is their path is respected, though it's seen in light of where it comes on the path. So therefore, what aspects they have in their religion that connect to the eternal religion, that will be discussed, brought out upon, inspired, like this, like we see Srila Prabhupada was discussing with the priests in Australia. I think it was in Melbourne, but I can't say for sure. But there, he just spoke on the love of God. That was the point, Hare Krishna. That was the point that he touched on. And he just spoke the whole time about developing our love for God. So that's something that they, in the faith that they were following, they have that idea, that inclination, that developing love for God is something good. So that end, they worship one Lord. So therefore, that's inspired. Everything else is left, because on that point, they are accepting that, they are inspired, and they are appreciating what we're saying also. So therefore, there's a common platform of respect. But if we find that then they start getting into detail of why you do this, why you do that, you should only do like this, Jesus the only way, all these kind of things, then naturally, then one might avoid that kind of situation, because then it's not good. Otherwise, Prabhupada would discuss, and he would say, okay, so let us take foundation of the philosophy is the Ten Commandments. That's what makes them who they are. Otherwise, what is the standard? What makes them Christian? What makes them Jews? It is this Ten Commandments. So then in this, the first one says, thou shalt not kill. So let's discuss this. Why you're killing in for eating? Why? You can, so much is there that you don't have to. Why you're killing for eating? You know, and he wouldn't move from the point. You know. But otherwise, we respect whatever is in a step towards. If it is perverted reflection, then we see is that one ignores them. You know, these apasampradayas and other things where they just make up their own thing. It seems like Vaishnava religion. It's not. These things we ignore. You know, something that they present themselves as big gurus and yogis and all that, but it's not actually a bona fide system. Then it's left like that. So therefore, yeah. So he says in this way, yeah. Yeah, but he says when you ignore them, it means without malice or envy. Like that. It's just, it's not dealt with. So in this way, you avoid attacking other spiritual paths. So that's the basic principle, is not to attack them. Know that there's only one religion, and that's the Vaishnava religion. It means worshipping the Supreme Lord, worshipping Vishnu. And then within that, there may be so many details according to which form of the Lord, which aspect, to what degree one's service to the Lord is desired in Vaikuntha, in Ayodhya, in Dwarka, Mathura, or Vrindavan. Then there'll be different, or there's different aspects within those, different rasas with Krishna, or different aspects of the particular rasa. Like in servitorship, then they have these four aspects of liberation. And then in other aspects, the rasa, then there's different levels of rasa. So like this, then there's one needs to see this. Therefore, there's going to be variety within the Vaishnava religion. But the religion is one. It's following the same principles. Devotion is the process. Devotion to the Lord is the process. Developing love for the Lord is the goal. The Lord is the Lord. We're His servants. That's the relationship. So, yeah, in this material world, then is a temporary place that is to be one of Krishna's energies, that's to be engaged in His service. So then, that's common to all the Vaishnava religion. It's just details depending upon the relationship with the Lord. Okay. So then Nityananda Das then brings up this point. Then one should not preach the Vaishnava religion. As he's saying is that they're going to come to it anyway. You know, it's by practicing what they're doing, if they're sincere, then they're going to come in contact anyway. Like that. If they really want to know God, then they will come in contact. So then he says, so therefore then there must be no need to preach. So then Haridas replies, one should preach in every way possible. Our Lord Mahaprabhu has given us all the duty to preach the Vaishnava religion. He said, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilita 792 and 936. My dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing Sankirtan in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nama, for by this process you will be able to deliver all fallen souls. Therefore, I order every man within this universe to accept this Krishna consciousness movement and distribute it everywhere. However, keep this in mind. Unworthy persons must first be made worthy before you give them many instructions about the holy name. In certain situations, one should remain silent. Do not give elaborate explanations in situations where your words become an obstacle to preaching. So as preaching must be going on, one must engage oneself in the Sankirtan movement, and one must engage others in the Sankirtan movement. So that is the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if they're unqualified, then one should not, they should first be made qualified before you give them too much instruction. Otherwise, then it will not be good for them. Like that. Yeah, it says where too much elaborate explanations will be an obstacle to preaching, then that should be avoided. Any questions?
Well, it seems like a very, like this particular verse is very rich. You could discuss a lot of points here.
Yes, you could, but if there's a lot of questions, then we can. You see, we are discussing, and if it is understood from what is here, and people, devotees are satisfied, then we move on. We're not. But if not, then discussion happens.
Different situations where one should remain silent. Different categories.
Well, if people are going to be basically, is if it will create enmity. Then that's the time to be silent. There's no need to, because one is non-envious, so therefore, then that non-enviousness also should be the atmosphere in which the preaching is going on. So that means the other persons also should not be envious. If it's going to create enviousness in them, then it's better to avoid speaking to them in that situation. So that you have to judge. What is that situation that might create that? That's what has to be seen. You know, so that's very much up to the individual situation like that. You might find people from other religions, maybe by speaking too much, it creates some problems. See, especially when you get into detail. Principle, generally, most people will accept. Unless you're dealing with Maya bodies, then even the principles of Krishna consciousness, they won't. Like that. It means they'll acknowledge, they'll accept very happily that this material world is a place of misery, if not some place to stay. We should endeavor for to uplift ourselves, come to higher levels of realization, try to understand who we are, who is God, all this and that. You can say like this, because you haven't said anything specific. You haven't said he's a person like this. So then they'll appreciate. So with them you may discuss the process of liberation. But not more. Or with other religious paths, then about the goal, about developing love for God. But not more than that, because detail then may create a problem, even amongst themselves. There's so many branches that each one feels that the other one is not quite doing right. Even within the Vedic literatures, or within the non-Vedic, you know, even within Buddhism, there's so many sects of Buddhism, different groups of Jains, different groups of Christians, Jews, Muslims. Like this, whatever there is, there's always difference and difference of opinion. And even within one, there's so many differences. So it's very much up to our experience to when we are in a situation, to judge the situation, decide how much should be spoken or not. But the main thing is not to create, not to criticize. That is the main thing. One should avoid attacking like that.
I've had the experience in quite a few devotees I know, especially young devotees who distribute books in the West. They'll be on the street and then they'll meet some fanatic evangelical type Christian, and then they'll get into discussion and they'll start off nice and they'll try and explain the philosophy in a nice way, and then it just won't work out because their opinions are so fixed. And then the devotee will leave with like a crook in their heart. Many times I've seen they come back to the temple and, met this man on the street and we talked and tried to have a nice discussion and all that, and there was crook in the heart and it sort of lingers with them for 1 or 2 days afterwards. What is that crook in the heart? What is that?
Well, this means that, see, as you have the Uttam Bhakta can defeat or, you know, establish the Krishna conscious Siddhanta over anything else. The Madhyama can do that, but sometimes he may not be able to. You know, just his experience and his broadness of understanding of the philosophy or depth of understanding may not be as much. So he may be able to be defeated. Or he, you know, just some situation doesn't know what to say. The Kanista, there's a good chance he won't be able to, not necessarily defeat, you know, if the person is more knowledgeable or just more clever. But the difference between them is the Madhyama won't be disturbed even if he didn't. It's just that he didn't know what to say, ran out of tools. But it doesn't mean his determination or anything is disturbed. But for the Kanista, might be, you know. Because the thing is with the Kanista, it's like what they're doing is right, everything else is wrong. Because if something else was right, then why am I doing this? Right? You know, it's like one is confident. The modern thing is you are confident. It's just anything, but we see especially the modern culture, you're confident in what you're doing because everything is wrong. Music you listen to is the best and everything else is garbage. What you dress, that's the best, everybody else looks like a, you know, frump. You know, like that, where the restaurants you go to are the best, what you eat is the best. Even on the menu, what you eat order is the best. The other guys don't know. So it's all ego. And but if something else is there, creates a doubt. I've seen that with those who have that mentality. You sit down to a meal with them, and you start eating in a different way to them, then immediately it's, why are you eating like this? You know, first they'll try to say, you don't know. But if you're confident, no, this is right, then they start to become, maybe what they're doing is wrong. Like that. So that's the thing. I think she probably gave the example of the, what's his name? That guy who walks like this.
Penguin?
Huh? Penguin. No, that's a penguin. But just
Charlie
a guy.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin. Close. probably in consciousness there's not much difference, but there is a difference in the species. But. So that Prabhupada mentioned a movie he had made. Is that they were at a big ball and everybody's dressed in tuxedos, top hat, tuxedo, everything. And then when he got up, he somehow or another sat or did something, or when he stood up, it ripped the tails on his coat. So they were ripped very much. You know, there's a little bit of a split, you know, but it ripped it all the way up the back. So then he thought, well, what to do, because everybody's going to complain, you know, and make jokes and everything like that, because it's a very formal situation. So then he grabbed the woman he was with, and then they started dancing very madly on the floor, you know, very much energy and passion and confidence and everything, you know, that everybody else was like overwhelmed, that this guy is so much more together than them. And then, you know, they see it's different because he has that split thing. So then they all start ripping their coats and then all dancing on the floor also like that. So then Prabhupada made that point. If you're confident in that, then the others will follow because they don't have any standards, right? The Vedic, there is a standard. So you're confident because of that standard, or you're confident because of the standard of devotional service. But the Western, there is no standard. So therefore, one has to be, how do you say, the Kanista hasn't accepted that standard yet. So to him it's just, I could accept this, I've taken this now, okay, there, you know, I'm Hare Krishna, okay. But then other things up there, someone else is confident, then it's like, well, how come I'm not doing that? Therefore they have to say that anyone who's not doing it is an infidel, basically. Like that, there's savages or infidels, or, you know, there's all kinds of, there's nice terms for everybody, you know. Basically it just means they're schmoes, you know. So so that's important for the Kanista because it establishes their faith. But the problem is then in that confidence, if they go out and preach to people they shouldn't to, then their faith may be put to the test. So that's why it said, don't preach to the faithless. One, it's not good for that person, but if the person is not very mature, it's not good for them either. You know?
But it's such a common thing. I've seen it.
Yeah.
As soon as you join.
So yeah, because one is, no, preaching, going out, and that's okay, but you just know that these kind of people, you're not going to defeat them because they don't work on logic, they work on sentiment. And the sentiment's all they have, so therefore, you can't change their sentiment, because if logically you present something, then they have to give up their sentiment. So generally they just stand on that sentiment only. So their strong preachers just mean they're very sentimental. So it's a difficulty. Otherwise, basically you try to avoid them. You know, if they go after you, you excuse yourself, or you come up with. You can speak to Bimala Prasad here if you want to know lines for them. You know, if they come up and say, have you found Jesus? And then you say, oh, I didn't know he was lost, but if I come across any information, I'll get back to you. You know, he just has like that unlimited lines how to bewilder these kind of persons. You know, like that. Yeah, I don't know whether like that. Have you bathed in the blood of Jesus? No, I just took a regular bath this morning. I took a shower this morning. It takes too much time. Just stuff like this. He just says stuff that just completely, they don't know what to think. You know? So then, you know, in that way, then you excuse yourself and get away. But he knows so many. He could run a seminar on how to think about it. Okay.
Yeah, it's very good.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay. So, okay. Overwhelmed with love by hearing saintly Haridas Babaji's sweet words, Nityananda Das began to roll about on the ground in ecstasy. Then all the assembled Vaishnavas chanted the holy names of Lord Hari. They all offered dandavat obeisances to the saintly Babaji. Then that day's meeting in the secluded grove came to an end, and everyone returned to his own place. Chapter 9. Oh, this is interesting. Eternal religion and modern science civilization. Nitya dharma o prakriti vigyan evam shabhyata. So this is even a problem back in those days. Living among the Vaishnavas in Godrum for 3 or 4 years, Lahiri Mahashai became pure in heart. He always chanted the holy names of Lord Hari. He wore simple clothing, and he had either sandals or wooden slippers. His pride of caste was now thrown far away. Whenever he saw a Vaishnava, he would at once offer dandavat obeisances and insist on taking the dust of that Vaishnava's feet. He would search for pure Vaishnavas and accept the remnants of their meals. Sometimes his sons would visit. Understanding his situation, they would not propose that he return home. Everyone could see that Lahiri Mahashai was a Vaishnav Babaji. Following the conclusion accepted by the Vaishnavas of Sri Godruma, he understood that renunciation was needed within the heart, and the external trappings of renunciation were not important. Following the example of Srila Sanatana Goswami, he would take one piece of cloth and divide it into four. Those would be his garments. He wore a sacred thread around his neck. Sometimes his sons would try to give him money, saying, I do not accept money from materialists. He would not take it. Once Chandrasekhar tried to give him 100 coins to have a great festival for the Vaishnavas. Remembering the example of Raghunath Das Goswami, Lahiri Mahashai refused the money. One day the Paramahamsa Babaji said, O Lahiri Mahashai, you never act in any way improper for a Vaishnava. Though I am the sannyasi, you teach me that true renunciation is. If you accept a Vaishnava name from me, then everything will be complete. Lahiri Mahashai replied, you are my Parama Guru. Whatever you wish, that will be done. The saintly Babaji said, you come from Shantipur, therefore I will call you Advaita Das. Offering dandavat obeisances, Lahiri Mahashai accepted the merciful gift of his new name. From that day forward, everyone called him Advaita Das, and the cottage where he performed devotional service they called Advaita Kutir. Advaita Das had a childhood friend named Digambar Chattopadhyay. Holding various high posts in the Mohammedan government, he had become wealthy. Attaining old age, he retired from his government post, returned to his hometown of Khulna, and tried to find Kalidas Lahiri. He heard that Kalidas Lahiri had gone to Sri Godrum. Accepting the name Advaita Das, and was always chanting the holy names of Lord Hari. So Kalidas Lahiri, I guess, was Lahiri Mahashai. Digambar Chattopadhyay was a fanatical devotee of Goddess Durga. His response to hearing a Vaishnava's name was to cover his ears with his hands. Hearing that his old friend had become fallen in that way,
He declared, "O Vamana Das, arrange for a boat. I will go to Navadvip and rescue my unfortunate old friend, Kalidas." Quickly arranging for the boat, Vamana Das returned and informed his master. Digambar Chattopadhyay was very intelligent. He was learned in the Tantras, and he was also learned in the ways of the Mohammedans. Arguing in Persian and Arabic, he could even defeat the best Mohammedan scholars. Arguing about the Tantras, he made the best Brahmana scholars speechless. His name was well known in Delhi, Lucknow, and other places. In his leisure time, he had written a book titled Tantra Sangraha, an anthology from the Tantras. He was learned in many subjects and could discourse on many scriptural passages. Proudly grasping his Tantra Sangraha, Digambar stepped into the boat. After a six-hour journey, the boat landed at Sri Godruma. Staying in the boat, he sent an intelligent messenger to Sri Advaita Das. Sri Advaita Das was sitting in his cottage and chanted the holy names of Lord Hari. Digambar Chattopadhyaya's messenger approached and bowed down. Advaita Das asked him, "Who are you and why have you come?" The messenger replied, "I am sent by Sri Digambar Chattopadhyaya." He asked this question, "O Kalidas, do you remember me or have you forgotten?" Sri Advaita Das replied, "Digambar, where? My childhood friend? Do I have the power to forget him? Has he taken shelter of the Vaishnava religion?" The messenger said, "He is sitting in a boat by the landing place. I cannot say whether he has become a Vaishnava." Advaita Das said, "Why does he stay at the landing place? Why does he not come to my cottage?" Hearing this, the messenger left. After an hour, Digambar Chattopadhyay appeared at Advaita Kutir with three or four gentlemen. Digambar always was generous at heart. When he saw his old friend, his heart became filled with joy. Singing some verses he himself had written, he embraced Advaita Das. He sang, "O Mother Kali, who in the three worlds knows all about your transcendental pastimes? Sometimes you are a man, sometimes a woman, and sometimes a ferocious warrior. You become Brahma and create the world. You become Shiva and destroy it. You become all-pervading Vishnu and protect everyone. You become Krishna and play the flute in Vrindavan forest. You become Gauda and make all of Navadvip wild with the chanting of the holy names." Advaita Das said, "My brother, come in, come in." Digambar sat on a leaf seat. Tears of love glistened in his eyes. He said, "Dear brother Kalidas, where shall I go? Now you are a sannyasi and you have given up duties and demigods. How hopeful I was when I first came from Punjab. Our boarhead friends, Pesha, Pagal, Kendra, Girish, Ishay Pagal, Dana Mayara, Kaili Chutor, Kanti Bhattacharji, all have died. Only you and I remain. I thought some days I would cross the Ganga and visit you at Shantipur, and other days you would cross the Ganga and visit me at Ambika. In the few days that remain for us, we would sing together and study the Tantras together. Alas, bad luck has struck my head. You have become a bull-headed fool, useless in this world and the next. Look at yourself. Tell me, what has happened to you?" Advaita Das. Advaita Das could see that this person was very bad company. He began to think how he could escape the hands of this childhood friend. He said, "Brother Digambar, do you remember how one day when we were playing Dandaguli, we gradually came to that old tamarind tree?" Dandaguli means you have a stick and you have this piece of another small stick that's kind of like you carve the ends so it's kind of pointed. So when you put it on the ground, you take your other stick and if you hit one of the pointed ends, it will flip up in the air. And then while it's in the air, then you whack it. You know, and then it goes flying so far. And then the other guy has to do something with it. Like that. All kinds of nice rules. So it's very popular in the villages. So do you remember how one day we were playing Dandaguli, we came to that old tamarind tree? Digambar, yes, I remember. That was near Goridas Pandit's house. The tamarind tree was where Gorintai used to sit. Advaita, as we were playing, you said, "Don't touch that tamarind tree." Aunt Sachi's son used to sit here. If we touch this tree, we will become sannyasis. Digambar, I remember, I could see that you liked the Vaishnavas. I said, you will fall into Gauranga's trap. Advaita, brother, for a long time I was like that. I was always just about to fall into that trap. Now I have fallen in. Digambar, there are too many spelling or grammatical errors. Oh. Priti?
Especially.
This thing says there's too many errors here to display it, so what can I do? That's all?
Yeah. Okay.
Digambar, catch hold of my hand and come out. It is not good to stay in a trap. Advaita, brother, I am very happy in this trap. I pray that I shall stay here forever. Just once you should touch this trap and see what it is like. Digambar, I have seen. In the beginning it is happiness, but in the end it is a hoax. Advaita, do you think the trap where you live will bring you happiness at the end? My mind says it will not. Digambar, let us see. We are servants of Goddess Mahavidya. In this life we have happiness, and in the next life we also have happiness. You think that you are happy, but I don't see that you are happy. In the end, there will be no end to your sufferings. Why does someone become a Vaishnava? I cannot say. Look, we enjoy eating fish and meat and all other things. We are happy. We are more civilized than you. We enjoy all the good things modern science provides. You have renounced all these good things, and in the end for you, there will be no escape. Advaita, why, brother, will there be no escape for me? Digambar, if Mother Nishtarini becomes adverse, then even Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva cannot escape. Mother Nishtarini is the primordial power. She gives birth to Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. By her power, she protects them. When the Great Mother wills, the great pot of the universe, material universe, will again enter her womb. Have you worshipped the Mother, so she will have mercy upon you? Advaita, is Mother Nishtarini conscious, or is she unconscious matter? Digambar, she is consciousness personified. All her desires are at once fulfilled. It is by her wish that spirit was created. Advaita, what is spirit and what is matter? Digambar, Vaishnavas only worship. They know nothing of philosophy. Spirit and matter are like two halves of a chickpea. Unhusk it, and there are two halves. Leave the husk untouched, and there is one chickpea. When consciousness and unconsciousness join and become one, that is called Brahman. Advaita, is your mother female or male? Digambar, sometimes she is male and sometimes female. Advaita, spirit and matter are like two halves of a chickpea. Which is the mother and which is the father? Digambar, you are eager to know the truth. We know the truth very well. The truth is that matter is mother and spirit is father. Advaita, who are you? Digambar, when I am bound by ropes of illusion, I am an individual soul. When these ropes are untied, I am Lord Sadashiva. Well, that means then you become the husband of your mother. Advaita, you are spirit. You are not matter. Digambar, I am spirit. Mother is matter. When I am bound by illusion, she is my mother. When I am free from illusion, she is my wife. Wow, these guys are weird. Advaita, now the truth is out. Now doubt is gone. Where did you get these truths? Digambar, brother, you are always saying Vaishnava, Vaishnava. I am not like that. I have associated with many sannyasis, brahmacharyas, and tantric saints. I have studied the tantras day and night. That is how I have attained this knowledge. If you like, I can teach it to you. Advaita, thinking to himself, how horrible, how unfortunate. Aloud, very good, please explain one thing to me. What is civilization and what is modern science? Digambar, to speak in such a way that pleases respectable, one, to speak in such a way that pleases respectable people, two, to wear clothing that pleases them, and three, to eat food they like, food they like, to do things like them, and not to do anything to displease them. You do. Oh, I see. What is. Okay. So, civilization is to speak in such a way that pleases respectable people. Two, to wear clothes that please them. And three, to eat food they like, to do things like them, and not to do anything to displease them. You do not do any of those three. Does this sound. This sounds like a. I won't say. But we see, you see, devotees have taken up this philosophy. Advaita, how is that? Digambar, you do not associate with others. You are very unsocial. The Vaishnavas have never learned the art of flattering others with sweet words. When they see someone, they always tell them to chant the holy name of Hari. Can't they say something else? When people see your clothing, they refrain from inviting you to visit them. Right? You wear a stupid tuft of hair on the top of your head and beads around your neck, and your own garment is a loincloth. You only eat vegetables and roots. You are not civilized, even slightly. Right? Because civilization means to eat what they eat, speak what they speak, and wear what they wear, and never displease them. Advaita, thinking to himself, if I quarrel with him, he will go away. That would be good for me. Aloud, does this kind of civilization make one's next life auspicious? Digambar, it does not make the next life auspicious. If there is no civilization, how will society become uplifted? First, society must be uplifted. When it is uplifted, then people try to improve the next life. Brother, if you do not become angry, I could say something. Digambar, you are my boyhood friend. I should give up my life for your sake. Why would I not peacefully tolerate a single statement of yours? We are civilized men. Even if we are angry, sweet words will stay on our mouths. The more we hide our true feelings, the more civilized we become. Advaita, human life is for only a few days. Still, it contains many troubles. In this very short life, one could sincerely worship Lord Hari. The civilization you talk about is only a way to cheat the soul. Therefore, I say that this civilization is only another word for cheating. When men walk on the path of truth, they are simple and honest. When men's actions are a collection of lies, their hearts are full of cunning, their deeds are sins, and their words are empty flattery. That is your civilization. True civilization is not like that. In true civilization, men are honest and sincere. Nowadays, people merely hide the wickedness in their hearts, and that hiding they call civilization. The true meaning of civilization is honesty and goodness. What you call civilization is only cheating and wickedness. Civilization that is sinless is found only among the Vaishnavas. So-called civilization that is filled with sins is liked only by they who are not Vaishnavas. The civilization you describe has nothing to do with the soul's eternal nature. If wearing fashionable clothes that pleases others is the true mark of civilization, then prostitutes are the most civilized. Okay. That's it. The purpose of clothing is only to cover the body. Clothing should be neat and clean and free from unclean odors and other faults. Food should be pure and nutritious. There is nothing wrong with foods like that. You think only that food should be palatable. You don't consider whether it is pure or not. Liquor and meat are naturally impure and unholy. The civilization that lives by enjoying them is only a collection of sins. What you call modern civilization is the civilization of Kali Yuga. Digambar, have you forgotten the very civilized society of the Muslim emperors? You should see how the people dress fashionably and speak politely in the Muslim emperor's court. Advaita, that is only material politeness. What does a man lose if he is unaware of his exaggerated politeness? What does a man lose if he is unaware of this exaggerated politeness? Brother, you spent too many days working for the Muslims. That is why you defend the Muslim ways. True civilization is when men are free from sins. Civilization that encourages sin is the civilization of Kali Yuga. That kind of civilization is only a pathetic joke. Digambar, look, the modern idea is humanism. They who don't accept modern civilization aren't considered human. Fashionable clothing that makes women attractive and masks their imperfections are very popular nowadays. Fashionable clothing that makes women attractive and masks their imperfections. Now they mask the imperfections with cosmetics and don't bother. How you say? Yeah.
Dressing.
Yeah, it means, yeah, bother with dressing. Okay. Advaita, you consider whether this is good or... Advaita, you consider, but at the same time it does mask their imperfections. Because the way they make the clothes then makes it. You consider whether this is good or bad. I see that the people who advance this modern civilization are only clever opportunists. Partly because they are superstitious, and partly because they like to conceal their own flaws. These people like this... clever opportunists. Partly because they are superstitious, and partly because they like to conceal their own flaws. These people like this dishonest civilization. Will a wise man be happy in such a civilization? This civilization of rogues can be kept together only by meaningless words and by brute force. Digambar, some say that the people of the world are gradually becoming more educated. As they become more educated, they will become more civilized. And as the people become more civilized, the earth will gradually become its Swargaloka. Advaita, those philosophers are smoking ganja. Anyone who believes these stories is rich in blind faith. They who don't believe those stories are fortunate. There are two kinds of knowledge, one, spiritual, and two, material. I don't think spiritual knowledge is increasing. In many places, spiritual knowledge is collapsing. I think it is material knowledge that is increasing. Does material knowledge touch the soul eternally? When material knowledge increases, then the heart becomes attracted to material things and has contempt for the spiritual truth. I agree that material knowledge is increasing, but from that knowledge comes a dishonest civilization. That civilization brings great misfortune to the soul. Digambar, why misfortune? As I said before, human life is very short. The soul is like a traveler, briefly staying at an inn. He should use this short time to attain spiritual perfection. If the travelers are concerned only with how to be most comfortable at the inn, the time they should be spending on planning their journey is lost. As material knowledge increases, the time spent on spiritual things will decrease. I think that material knowledge should be accepted only as far as it is needed in ordinary affairs. There's no need for more material knowledge, or its lady friend, material civilization. For how many days will the benefits of this world last? Digambar, I have fallen into the company of a fanatic sannyasi. Is society not important? Advaita, different kinds of society bring different results. If one associates with Vaishnavas, then there is a good result. If one associates with materialists, then the results are not good for the soul. Let us stop talking of this. What is material science? Digambar, many kinds of material sciences are described in the Tantras. Whatever knowledge, skill, and beauty are present in this world are all described in material science. Military science, medicine, music, and astronomy are all examples of material sciences. The material nature is the first power. Again, I describe the spiritual truth. She gave birth to the material world. From her it is manifested. By her power it is filled with wonderful variety. One by one all forms come from her. One by one all kinds of knowledge come from her. When a person understands this, Mother Nishtarini frees him from sin and he becomes liberated. The Vaishnavas will not seek out Mother Nishtarini. However, we attain liberation by understanding these truths. Look at the careful study of material knowledge. Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, the famous Hakim, and many other great souls in the Yamana countries have written many, many books. Advaita, you say that the Vaishnavas are not interested in science. That is not true. Why not? The Vaishnavas are interested in the science of pure knowledge, which is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam's four nutshell verses, 2, 9, 30. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Knowledge about me, as described in the scriptures, is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully." Pleased by Brahma's devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him this instruction even before the material world was created. In this way, the Lord taught him the pure Vaishnava religion. The Lord said, "O Brahma, knowledge about me, as described in the scriptures, is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. O Digambar, there are two kinds of knowledge, one, spiritual knowledge and material knowledge. Because it is attained through the material senses, material knowledge is very impure. Neither is it needed for spiritual advancement. It is needed only for the conditioned soul's life in the material world. Spiritual knowledge is called Shuddha Gyan, pure knowledge. That eternal knowledge is the foundation stone of Vaishnava's temple. That eternal knowledge is the foundation stone of the Vaishnava's temple of devotional service. Spiritual knowledge and material knowledge are very different. They are opposites. You call material knowledge science, but it is not science at all. You call medical knowledge and other kinds of material knowledge science, but it is spiritual knowledge, which is different from material knowledge, that should be called science. Knowledge and science are synonyms. Direct perception of the spiritual truth is called knowledge. When it eclipses material knowledge, pure spiritual knowledge is called science. Thus, these two are actually the same thing, called either knowledge or science in different circumstances. You call material knowledge science. The Vaishnavas call the proper use of material knowledge science. Military skill, medicine, astronomy, chemistry, and all other kinds of material knowledge have no eternal relation to the soul. Therefore, they have no bearing at all on the soul's eternal activities and eternal duties. The Vaishnavas do not criticize the materialists who perform Vedic rituals, karmakanda, for material elevation. Why not? Indirectly, their attempts for material elevation help the spiritual advancement of the Vaishnavas. You may call material knowledge material science. What is wrong with that? It is foolish to squabble over names. So as the material knowledge is called science when it is connected to the Lord, when it is connected to the spiritual process, then it is science. Otherwise, then it's just material knowledge. Because science means how to know the soul, how to know God, how to know what is this material world. So here is, they on their own aren't really science. So we can see here is that in all this is that there's a great, because the purpose is to enjoy, like that, to enjoy the material world, though they say liberation, but they're very happy with what they have. So how there'll be liberation? And what is the liberation of these materialists? Then they will enjoy the material nature, to become the husband of the material nature. Like that. So this is the problem, is that while they're now material energy, if they say material energy, they say the two halves of the chickpea. So one is material knowledge, one is spiritual. So the spiritual is the father, the material is the mother. And so then he goes on to say the mother, everything's come from there. So that means it's all material. And then she says, oh, soul, everything comes from there. So, but then that means they don't understand the soul. And then, you know, so they're not actually understanding the position. So they say mother and then father. So this is why, in the pure sense, it is not wrong. But only the Vaishnavas can understand it. Because you can't separate the energy and the energetic. So therefore, the origin, then, the energetic, that is Krishna. That is the male principle. Energy, then, is the female principle.
And in this order, it's applied here, means the shadow of the internal potency. So that makes the material energy. So then it's mother. But then father, then is Krishna. Because he is the origin of this energy. So then, if you follow what they're saying properly, then it takes you through to Krishna. But the problem is when they get through to the spiritual, then they become the male principle themselves. They become the father, right? You become your own father, and therefore then you have a relationship with your own mother, right? So this is the problem, is they want to be God, they want to enjoy the material energy. They have no understanding of the spiritual energy. For them, spiritual doesn't exist. Because if you worship the material energy, how you'll know spirit? So here, then it's all convoluted. So for them, then all these things are science, they're important and all that, because they forward material enjoyment. But at the same time, as they're talking about liberation, but that liberation means now they're really enjoying. It means now we're enjoying a little bit, and then if we get liberated, then we'll enjoy the whole thing, right? If you get the material energy for your enjoyment, then you're enjoying everything that's there, right? Rather than just a portion. So we can see it's a very materialistic, nasty, philosophy like that. So that it's not well thought out. So much devotion seems to be there for the mother, worship of the mother, but they're only trying to become the husband of the mother, and in this way then exploit the mother. So it's not a good philosophy. So even though they're saying they're worshiping the energy, they themselves, so it's mixed, you see, with karma and jnana. So impersonalism is there. There's not something else. It's actually impersonal. The same time, it's with the mood of enjoyment. So you can see, this is the modern impersonalism also. Right? This is the source of it. The old one is the renounced one. You leave this and you become Brahman. This way you become God, but you're not exploiting the material energy. You're giving up the senses, and you just become God, the controller. But in this one, you become God, the enjoyer. Right? That's the principle here. We enjoy here and then we'll enjoy there. Even though husband means controller, but they're emphasizing the point of enjoyer. Right? So we see that in this modern, impersonal ideas, then they become the enjoyer. These non-Vedic paths of impersonalism, they become the enjoyer. Right? You see also even in the, simpler forms, the New Age, one becomes the enjoyer. Because that's the whole principle. If something's wrong in your life, it's because you're not enjoying your life. Why you're not enjoying it? You're restricting yourself. Right? That's the other impersonal path. The other personal path, you restrict yourself, and then you get yourself out of the control of the material energy. But the modern is why restrict yourself? This is unnatural. Therefore, don't restrict yourself. And in this way, then you can enjoy the material energy. You'll become lord of the material energy. You'll become God, but as enjoyer rather than as controller. So it's the same thing, just a different, what's your purpose? Like that. So both are impersonal. So the modern seems to lean more on this, we see, rather than... And all these that get into the Tantra... Even you see Buddhism that gets into the Tantra, Tibetan Buddhism and that. They get up there, they control the demonesses, they enjoy these demonesses, they do all these things happen. So it's all the same principle. The Tantra means enjoying the senses. Like that. So then Maya allows that one thinks like this, because then you get more entangled. They never become. They say to become Sadashi. You can't become Sadashi. You can't become the Lord. You just think, and this way you become more and more entangled. Right? Because they're not getting out. They're not renouncing. They're getting involved. Shiva's detached. They're not. Sadashiva has nothing to do with Maya. So how they'll become Sadashiva in control? So therefore, the real Sadashiva is Vishnu. Like that. So he is the male principle. Rama Devi is the female principle. That then is reflected into this material world as Shiva and Parvati. You know, but even Shiva is renounced, and Parvati is chaste. So therefore, what they're getting is another form of Maya. There's so many forms of Maya like that that extend right down. You know, so whatever one has interest in, however one wants to control the material energy, there's a form of Maya in that form. So therefore, one, like here you said, Mahavidya. So there's all the Dasa Mahavidyas, all the different forms of Durga, and then all those sub-forms of Durga, and all this, like that. These. So no one, so we see it's a very strange, very perverted, sensual platform, anamoy platform, because it's all by perception of the senses themselves. It doesn't get off this platform. They're not actually getting to a high... Though they talk liberation and Shiva, they never get to this platform in moksha. They just stay on this anamoya platform. But it regulates that. Therefore, it's considered superior to Western materialism. Because Western materialism, non-Vedic, is unregulated. By here, then, it's regulated according to the Vedic tradition. Though it's the lowest of the platforms, the most mundane. Okay. Yeah, so then Advaita is mentioned. You may call material knowledge material science. What is wrong with that? It is foolish to squabble over names. Digambar, well, if there were no progress in material knowledge, it would not be so easy for you to pass your life in devotional service. Therefore you also should strive for material progress. Right. You know, people say, well, how would you do? You've come to India, you've flown here in the plane, you drove here in the car, you're using all these things. Yes, if they weren't there, then we'd just walk. You know, we wouldn't bother, you know. So they say these things. So then one should endeavor for all of them. If they want to follow their philosophy, then you should endeavor for all of them. Why you're not becoming a nuclear physicist or a neurobrain surgeon like that, you know, it's like, you know, why you're only specializing, you should do all of them. So if we specialize also, then what's your problem? Main point is without the body or the brain, then there would be no progress. The scientists couldn't progress. So how does that work? Where did that come from? So we're concentrating on that science. So yes, we're concentrating on the science that comes before this science. So if we've already done a higher thing, then you can't complain why one's not doing a lower thing. Like that. So that's the... Advaita. Different people with different desires try in different ways, and the Supreme Controller gives each person the fruits of his actions. Digambara. Why do people have different desires? Advaita. Desires are created by Advaita, desires are created by past karma. One whose material desires are strong becomes learned in material things and expert in material work. What is produced in this way may help the Vaishnavas in their service to Lord Krishna. However, the Vaishnavas themselves need not become expert in these different skills. Look, a carpenter may make a cart, and householder Vaishnavas may use that cart to carry the deity of the Lord. Bees may gather honey, and the devotees of the Lord may take the honey and employ it in the Lord's service. Not everyone in this world is interested in spiritual advancement. Okay, so that means the materialists do what they do, and the devotees take it and use it in the Lord's service. So then it puts the Vaishnavas on the top of the pile, rather than the bottom of the pile. Because you do the work, and then we use it for what we're using, our purposes. So then they may feel it's exploitation. You know, why, you know, you're not putting into the system that you're taking from the system. No, but we are just engaging in the Lord's... Our duty is to engage things in the Lord's service. You have something nice, we'll engage it. Like that. But one has to remember is where that brain come from. The brain came from the Lord. Therefore the science was created. Therefore the object was made. and now we engage it in the Lord's service. So it's, we're simply, you are, how you say, the scientist is absorbed in the process of using what is the Lord's to create something, and then we're taking that something and offering it back to the Lord. So it's a natural process, so one shouldn't complain that why the Vaishnavas are dealing in this way.
Does that example apply that the mouse digs the hole and the snake comes and eats the mouse and then lives in the hole?
It can be used, that's from our side, yes, but from, I mean, that can be used in many ways. Prabhupada said that about the long building. He said all that, because when they were building it, all those workers are there, they're building it. And said then after they've built it, then like the snake, we'll come in and then we'll take over. Then we'll live in the building, kick them out and we'll live here. So it is similar. But the point is that they're taking the intelligence and the material energy from God and creating something by their science. We're taking that same thing and then offering it back to God. So all it is that then there's a complete circle. So in the Vedic civilization, then those sciences become sciences because they become part of the process for offering it back. But if it's not, then they're material knowledge, but it's not really scientific. It may be on the material platform, but it only brings us or entangles us in this material world. While the devotee's position then is in a higher position, so therefore the lower is not necessary. But its higher position is not one of exploitiveness. One doesn't look down upon the others. Because by their doing these things, then we're able to perform our service. So it goes both ways. Okay. You know, of course then they might say, but at least, you know, we're taking the things, doing something with it. You're not doing anything, you're just using it. In the Lord's, you're just taking it and using it. But they are also just taking what's the Lord's and using. So we're just taking that and giving it back. So therefore, nothing's ours anyway. The materialists don't own it, the Vaishnavas don't own it, only God owns it. So therefore, both are in the same situation. Only the Vaishnavas don't have a mood of ownership while the materialist does. So because of that ownership, they become very attached, they become very envious, they become very protective. And then they feel that there is some problem is there. Not everyone in this world is interested in spiritual advancement. From their different desires, different kinds of work are manifested. Men are of different kinds, some exalted and others lowly. They whose desires are lowly may work in different ways, and they whose desires are lofty may use the result of that work for good purposes. Pushed by these differences, the circle of the world turns. Materialistic men work in different ways, and what they produce may be helpful to the spiritualists, the Vaishnavas. The materialists do not understand how they are helping the Vaishnavas. Still, bewildered by Lord Vishnu's Maya potency, they act in that way. Thus, the entire world unknowingly serves the Vaishnavas. So, I'm not sure I've heard devotees mentioning that something like that. Devotees are using the car. And who's the manufacturer of the car, they get the benefit, you know, because they've made the car and then the devotees are using it. So in this way, actually, by the devotees, how you say, by their preaching, then so many people are benefited unknowingly. So therefore, one can easily understand that anyone in this world who is in a good position has done some devotional service before, though it's been unknowing. We can see how indirect that it becomes, you know? So that's it's because sometimes the devotees feel that what we're doing is not very significant, or it's just a small amount of devotees, and why we're not being civilized by dressing and acting and eating and speaking and everything like everybody else. Of course, in the world, those who are really on the cutting edge of culture and fashion are always trying to do something that no one else is doing. Right? It means if you're fashionable, it means you're wearing something that's ahead of what everybody else is wearing. You know? It means there are those who wear what someone else has dreamed up. Then there's those, the ones that dream it up. Right? And then those who are in high fashion, you want to wear something that you won't see others wearing. You know? As soon as you see someone else wearing it, you lose interest to wear it. So therefore, they create fashions, there's only one item made or a few items of that made so that they can cater to that high end. So then the devotees are on the cutting edge of, you know, I say, you know, like bald heads and sikhas, you know, like that. Now they're in fashion, you know, they're very fashionable nowadays. So the whole idea is that this world is that the devotees, they perform their duties as is directed by Krishna. And then all those persons and all those things that they come in contact with, all those persons are benefited. Those who have created these things, just like the bees, they create the honey, you offer the honey to Krishna, those bees also get benefit. You offer the grains of rice to Krishna, those plants that grew the grains, they get benefit. The people who grow them get benefit. You know, so the whole, it's incredible how the whole cycle works. Then you can see that actually the Vaishnavas maintain are the ones that are maintaining the universe like that. But at the same time is they never feel we are maintaining the universe because it's Krishna who's maintaining. Though in his pastime of maintenance, then he engages the devotees in that service like that. So therefore then the devotee should not become proud. It's just Krishna's amazing arrangements, his pastime that's going on. Therefore we can't consider, well, I'm the one that's being kind and merciful. Therefore I will use all kinds of material gadgets and gizmos just to purify those people. But you have to see that your use of it is actually useful in Krishna consciousness. If it's not, then it's just, it doesn't have really any benefit.
Maharaj, what do you think of the West? Is it more important to establish this kind of Vaishnava culture, like dressing, Vaishnava behaving, pulling, have image of Vaishnava, or to somehow adjust ourselves for preaching's sake?
Adjust yourself for preaching's sake. So when you're in the toilet, then you have to adjust yourself for preaching, right? It means you should use toilet paper, no?
No, I mean, then you're alone home, of course.
Yes, so, but then it should be obvious that's when you're out on the street, it's one thing, but when you're in your home. But generally what you see is those who adjust on the street when they're in the home, you go to most devotees' homes. It's rare I've ever found a devotee's home that when you go to it, it looks like a traditional home of the Vaishnava culture. It generally looks like a Western home. You know, wall-to-wall carpets. They walk around and they're wearing Western karmi clothes like that. You know, everything's just set up in Western terms. Like that, you know, same Western things, and same lack of ability to keep things clean. You know, so it's just a Western house that's been Krishnaized. You know, instead of the Mona Lisa on the wall, then they have, you know, a picture of Krishna on the wall, like that. And, you know, so basically, there's not much difference. So, which is fine; it doesn't matter. But the point is that in this, the living in that way does not to push forward the preaching doesn't necessitate this. It means one could live according to the Vaishnava tradition, and when one goes out to preach, one could go out and preach that tradition, even dress and act in that tradition. If it is such that it's a place where it's unfavorable for that, then one may adjust to the local dress and all that. But then adjustment means as a gentleman, not as a punk. Which you find that the young people, when they go out in Sankirtan, they go out as punks, not as gentlemen. The women go out as, you know, geeky girls. They don't go out as gentle women. You know, so that's the thing. So they're just, they're using their own conditioned attachments and conditioned nature and trying to put it into Krishna consciousness. A gentleman can approach anybody, even a punk, but a punk can't approach a gentleman. Right? So that's the thing. If you're going to do, then you'd be a gentleman. Vedic culture means we're gentlemen. Therefore we dress as gentlemen. A gentleman wears a dhoti, wears a cheddar. You know, is clean, acts in a particular way, speaks in a particular way. So that's the culture. If Western culture is necessary for certain situations, fine, but then it should be the gentleman's culture. But that's rare to see. I've very rare seen devotees go out preaching, saying that they have to go, and they went out dressed as a gentleman. They generally go out as a, you know, a 20-year-old, whatever, fashionable punk. That's what they generally go out as. Punk not meaning the style of fashion called punk. I mean punk meaning just, you know, just stupid kids that think that they're fashionable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. I've ever seen anyone dress in proper as a gentleman. Whatever. It can be a fashionable gentleman. It doesn't have to be, stiff. You know, but it still should be what's considered on that level. And I very rarely have seen it because they're not gentlemen themselves. Their conditioned nature is not that. Therefore, in any case, they have to adjust. Either they have to adjust to becoming gentlemen in the Vaishnava culture or gentlemen in the Western culture. Since we weren't gentlemen before we became a devotee, that's very hard. So they just want to be, you know, whatever it is. And in those days it was hippies. Now it's just, you know, different forms of hippies. You know, just, you know, like that. You know, unregulated, useless people. Like that. And so therefore, then so that's the problem. They want to say, that is okay, this is standard. And make a philosophy about it and say it's okay. Here it says, we can, no, but that's not what it says. Because if for preaching, is it best that we walk around like that? If you dress properly, then it'll be respected. Then you say, no, there's so many people. Who are those people? Yeah, okay, the teenagers at the university, the high school kids, the guys on the skateboards with the hats on backwards and funny running shoes will make a comment. But they comment about each other. They only call each other dirty words. So there's no question that they won't call us something anyway. But the gentlemen are the ones that actually run the place. The people that have influence on the world are those people, not the guy in the skateboard, not the guy punk at the university. You know, okay, the guy, the punk, he's like, you know, head on the campus of the, you know, most influential group there, political group. Okay, catch him. Then you get the rest. But just about the other riffraff, then. Why we would adjust our lifestyle for them. You know? If we're going to say West, then okay, then let's get serious. Prabhupada went, he went for the jugular vein. Bhaktivedanta Institute, you know, they're out there in three-piece suits talking to the people who actually do have influence on the world. You know? Other guys, you make them devotees, make them into Vaishnavas. These guys, then you catch them. Them, you go on there. Okay. You know, the Prabhupada sat in amongst the punks and hippies. What's more weird and wild than going out as a devotee? Like that. The difference is they have confidence that what they're doing is where it's at, and we don't. We're confident they'll be doing what we're doing. Like that. It's just a matter of confidence, as we mentioned before. Like that. If we're satisfied and we're confident, then they'll do it. They'll follow. They all followed Prabhupada. Yeah. When they were all trying to grow long hair, here comes a guy along with a shaved head. You know? Every endeavor, every day is trying to end up in bed with some girl. And here's a man who's saying no illicit sex, and even better, no sex. Right? And you just sit there and you just, you know, smoke and speculate, and this person is saying no speculation. Right? Okay, the vegetarian, there's some agreement there. Except for the garlic and onions and the eggs. So, therefore, then, Here it's very different, exact opposite. You know, against tradition, you know, counterculture. And here's a person saying the original culture. But because he's fixed in it, and it's so far out, the original, therefore it attracted the minds of these people who are going in exactly the opposite direction. So if such a contrast can be done, let alone now where things like New Age, this, that, are very common, and they talk all this astrology and this and yoga and so many things. I mean, it's so much more similar now than it was then. Though some people will say it's the opposite. You know, then it was a difference. You know, it was like this. In other words, material arrangements are actually the answer. Because it was materially favorable, therefore Krishna consciousness worked. And now materially it's not, therefore it can't work. Right? It means material solutions for spiritual problems. Right? I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know? So, therefore we see now it's much easier. You can talk anything about yoga, this, that. You can go and people will listen. Before it was very strange to people. Like that. So it's one has to see that it doesn't matter what situation one's in life, how one wants to live. One wants to live as a middle class American, one can live it. But one should take that and engage it to one's best ability in Krishna's service. And not make a philosophy that it's the best. The best is full surrender. Without attachment, without fruit of desire or impersonal, and is favorable to Krishna. That's what's standard. Now, if living in that way comes to this platform, fine. If it doesn't, then, okay, it's where I'm at now, maybe it'll have to change as I progress. But to make a philosophy that's okay, that's not so good. We have to be careful. Like that. So you have to see what situations are unfavorable. Actually, what is its unfavorable or what is its our embarrassment? Like that. One has to see that. I remember, yeah. Does that make some sense? Yeah, okay. Anything else? Or? Yes.
When Shiva is mentioned as the greatest devotee of the Lord, is it related to Sada Shiva?
Yes, Sadashiva is the great Vaishnava. Rudra, he is his expansion, but he is connected with the material energy. So he doesn't have that same purity like that. Sadashiva is the pure form, and then Rudra will be not. He's touched by the material energy. Like that. Therefore is a transformation. You know, we see into Shiva, there's a transformation. Like Prabhupada gives the example of milk turning into yogurt. So yogurt is the transformation. It's the same, but it's different. It has a different effect. Milk creates heat, yogurt creates cool, like that. So like that. Therefore, there's a difference. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Anything else? Okay, so we should end here. It's already late. There's so many other programs happening. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki
jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.
Hare Hare.
Somenes bhakti de apna samay maharaj ki
Shiva. You take Jupiter, is that Sadashiva?
Yeah. means so you're dealing with the Nidam Sada Shiva and also the original form of the unitary energy. So it's, she's means they're pure, they're devotees. Means all of them are devotees, but here there is manifest, the form of the activities of devotees. But like Rudra, he has the duties to perform for Lord Vishnu of destruction of the universe and taking care of the material energy, so therefore he has to take care, he has to deal. You know, just like the grihastha. Means the grihastha means, how you say it? Because of his contact with his wife, he has to take care of the wife. So he must get involved in those activities. What needs to be done, material nature has a form and has needs. So therefore, one must take care, one must protect. Right? So that means one gets involved. Right? But it's not necessary for the soul. Does that make some sense?
So a grihastha devotee should be constantly aware of that.
Means the grihastha takes care of women because women have a nature, so that nature must be addressed. That's the duty. It's not that one is, I want something out of women, so therefore I'm nice to him when I like, when I want something, I'm not nice when I don't need anything, and this and that. It means I have the duty to take care, so therefore I must take care. So that means whether it's nice or not nice, you have to take care, because they are who they are. Sometimes they're nice, sometimes they're not nice. Like that. So that's there. And at the same time as the women, no men, it's their business to assist. And so then to do that, then they can't assist if they're, you know, sometimes nice and sometimes not nice, so they have to behave nicely. So in this way, then both of them take care of each other.
Is it Vedic marriage as opposed to...
Yeah, then it's Vedic marriage, rather than a service, rather than exploitation. Yeah. It means otherwise, the man is wanting something. He's expecting some nice emotional exchange, pleasant, based on his terms, yeah, and service. You know, all kinds of things will be taken care of, and then he'll feel like the Lord, right? And then, but that's that. Though it may be pleasant, it's exploitative, you know. And then the woman is thinking she'll get so many things out of the man, you know. And so when she wants, then she'll be nice and pleasant, and when she doesn't want, then she won't be. So then the Vedic avoids that by it's done as service. So the man knows what the nature of woman is, and so therefore tries to please take care of that. And the woman knows the nature of man and tries to take care of that. And each knows their own nature and tries to see that the bad sides are not seen. Like that.
Otherwise Krishna's just forgotten.
Yeah, otherwise then what's the meaning? How will marriage be useful in Krishna consciousness? If one is not for pleasing Krishna, then how will it be, you know, like that? Because, you know, of course, there's the sentimental things. Yes, go to the temple together and we'll chant some nice hari. We'll do some nice bhajan together, right? Right? From make some nice music together, right? So then what do you do the rest of the time? You know, you gotta pay the bills, you gotta take care of the house, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. How will those be engaged in Krishna's service? Otherwise, it's just a sentimental idea. Therefore, so many grahasas go into it, think it'll be wonderful and nice, but then it's not wonderful and nice because it didn't come out the way they thought it would be wonderful and nice. So that's the thing. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So therefore it's duty to Krishna. Krishna says this is how grihastha should behave. So since we have attachment for that kind of interaction, therefore we take that service. Right? Means if we have attachment, that means it's part of the conditioned nature. It's necessary for the conditioned nature. We have a mind, you know, intelligence, senses, ego, that require that. The man requires that a woman tell him he's nice. Right? And the woman needs the man to feel that, you know, she's getting things done the way she wants it to. So therefore, that's required, therefore then marriage. But then in marriage, then those things, they have to be used in Krishna's service. So therefore, how does Krishna say the interaction should be, the activity should be? You know, the men
mentality should be. So therefore, then it becomes service. Otherwise, then one should describe what is it. If it's not service to Krishna, then what is it? You know what I'm saying? What does it leave? Yeah, but then it has to be dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. Those are the only four things that happen in this world that are not, you know, of course, unless you get down to just take, you know, kama, then you can take eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You know, saying, you know, it's just which level you want to put it. And so if we say what level it is, if it's liberation, then how is it liberation? Right? And one has to be able to explain it. Just saying it's not enough. One has to be able to explain it. So that's where the science needs to be known.
It's going to come up to the mark. It's going to come up to the mark. It's going to be.
Yeah, yeah. Then it becomes. The closer it is to the mark, then the more benefit you get. The more one advances, the more satisfaction there is. You know, getting what you want isn't necessarily always the most satisfying. Doing the right thing is more satisfying. Getting what you want, it was great the moment you got it, but after you have it, how long does that satisfaction last? Depending how long you wanted it, then you, for that many moments or days or weeks, then you kind of notice it. Like you've been wanting a certain item for so long, for years, then you finally get it. Then you're very protective of it for some time, but as you use it, you become accustomed to it, it becomes regular, and then it's just one of the things you have. Right? So that goes, but doing the right thing, you can always remember that it's been done right. You can have the satisfaction of having done it right. You know what I'm saying? But still, that's not enough, because that's still being in the realm of material ego and material needs. One has to come to the point of pleasing Krishna.
So you're talking about...
Yeah, it means you've done that, so therefore, since you've did that, means in the material world you're not going to get basically higher than interaction between man and woman. So if that's been done properly, you're happy that it's been done properly, but one still is not spiritually satisfied. Right? Then one can turn one's attention to there is a limit to material satisfaction. Therefore, I had this need, I fulfilled this need, but the need didn't give me the satisfaction I was looking for. I'm looking for the ultimate satisfaction. It gave me some immediate satisfaction, you know, some temporary, some material satisfaction, but that can't please the soul. Therefore, then one can turn from that into... So that's what vanaprastha is. Brahmacharya means understanding that science. Grihastha means applying that science and realizing that science. And vanaprastha means then you act upon that realization and pull yourself then out of the material energy. Means this, does that make some sense? So the idea is husband and wife, the two souls who have this idea that they'll be satisfied in this kind of a situation. There's something important to gain. So by working together, they see that there, you know, with time, that there is nothing really to gain. But they've followed the process according to how Krishna said it should be done. And then they can pull themselves out.
What about attachment which arises if it's proper relationship and serving, supporting each other?
Attachment's already there anyway. Because some people say, if I do nicely, then I'll be so attached, I'll never leave. But look at the people who don't have that attachment, the marriage breaks up, and then where do they go from there? How many people, their marriage breaks up, and then they just leave it and have nothing to do with material endeavor anymore? Right? What do they generally do?
Marry again.
And when that one breaks up, what do? Marry again. But the third time, they generally get it right. Some on the second. Fortunate people on the first. But many, it's not uncommon that our own devotees have been married three times. So therefore, and what are they looking for? The fulfillment of that attachment. So therefore, since that desire is there of that attachment, engage that attachment to Krishna's direction. Of course, it's a lower service. It's not direct. It's not like chanting your rounds and worshipping the deity. Preaching and like this, associating with Vaishnavas. But it is service that you've done it for Krishna. A woman needs to be dealt with like this. She has to be spoken to like this, dealt with like this, pleased in these ways. But who's made that standard? Right? God's made the standard. So you follow that, then you know that you've done it properly. And why are you doing it the way God's? Because that's the best way to take care of women, and you really want to get something out of the women. Then that's the demon's way of approaching the whole system. The Vaishnava's way is, this is the way Krishna likes it, and so therefore this woman belongs to Krishna. So I should take care of her how Krishna wants to take care. Krishna will take care of her. She's Krishna's woman. But I, having the need for womanly association, therefore I take care of this woman. I will take care of this woman on behalf of Krishna. Right? As Krishna's instrument, I will take care of this woman. So therefore, one is in that position, but at the same time, one can still be humble. Because one's simply an instrument. Not that, yes, I will take care of this woman, you know. But then who are we? How will we take care of? The energy comes, the potency comes from Krishna. Manliness is Krishna's quality, it's not the soul's quality. The soul is feminine, so where does it get this manliness that it can take care of a woman? It comes from Krishna. Right? And where does the feminineness of a soul who thinks it's a man come from? Right? All souls in the material world think they're men. So where does feminine qualities come from? It won't come from that nature, that polluted consciousness of soul. It comes from Krishna's potency, feminine potency. And the masculine, even though the soul's in a masculine mood, it doesn't mean that they actually are masculine. So therefore the masculine comes from Krishna. So in both ways, that it's only Krishna's potency that makes the men and makes the women. So because it belongs to Krishna, therefore it should be dealt with properly. The men should take care of the women properly, and at the same time protect the duties of the man, and the woman should perform their duties properly and properly respect the men. Then it works. Because if we're going to say we're not the body, then this is how it works if we're not the body. If we are the body, then we can have so many ideas how it should be done. But if we're not the body, this is how it works. Like this. But we're not the body, but we're attached to the material energy. So, and we realize this attachment. That's a grihastha. Grihastha means I'm attached, I realize, I recognize it. And therefore, I engage that attachment in Krishna's service. The grihamedi doesn't recognize it. So therefore, the material needs are in a higher priority than Krishna. Krishna may be the ultimate goal, but today he's not the priority. So that makes grihamedi. Okay. Grihastha means Krishna is the center, because I am Krishna's, my wife is Krishna's, but we have these attachments, therefore we'll engage these attachments in his service. According to his direction. It's favorable to him. He likes it this way.
And he will take care about that attachment.
The attachment will go if you... Yeah.
Because relationship with Vaishnavas become like not only men and women, if they are engaged in devotional service, supporting hands each other and having inspiration for Krishna Seva. Like,
but if it's inspiration on that, then it's inspiration from one devotee to another. It's not because of the wife's form and beauty and sweet voice and feminine graces. It's because of her support in Krishna consciousness. So that's devotional. Like that. So one has to be able to distinguish between them. So as time goes, one will distinguish more. Therefore, in Vanaprastha, husband and wife can be good friends who serve Krishna. But it's not so much based... By habit, they'll naturally do the duties of man and woman. But it's natural, they're there, and they'll be able to see it. They're women, so they do those duties. The other one's man, they do those duties. But the main thing is how to work in Krishna's service. So it's a science. It's a big science. Big science. And one has to, if one understands it, one survives it. If one doesn't, one doesn't. One may say, we don't care for these things. And then let's see what they say when they're 60 years old in the third marriage and they still have a daughter that's not grown up, right? It's going to take them until they're in their 70s before the daughter is old enough to get married. Right? You get married for the third time at 50. Right? Now, if someone's very powerful, maybe they'll have a son. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll have a daughter. Right? I mean, it's because it goes by who's powerful. So women generally don't, their power stays longer. Right? You see, women go out of the scene when they're still strong. Right? It means the childbearing age for a woman is during the woman's strength. She can't bear children when she gets old. Right? Well, for the man it may go longer. So the older he gets, the weaker he is. And so therefore, male or female depends upon whose seed is stronger. The woman's seed is stronger, you get a girl. If the man's seed is stronger, you get a boy. So generally the tendency is the older one gets, then one has girls. You know? Unless one is quite strong, like Ajamil, right? He was 88 when Narayan was born. So he was doing okay. He was quite powerful. You know?
Well, she was so tired.
No. Generally that could be there. But generally it's there, I say. She was fired up enough to keep a guy at 88 still ready to go out there and bring in the box, you know. So she was still doing okay also. So then when you're gonna be freed. If you want to be dutiful, then the girl has to get married. That means you're gonna be in your 70s. You know? Okay, for an Indian who's led a very regulated life, you know, very proper life, 70 is not so old. 70-year-old Indian who's come from such a background is very fit, physically is very fit, like that. They have to be in their 80s. They start to lose it in their 80s. But Westerners start to lose it sometimes in 60s, 70s, very much of the time. So then, you know, it's cutting it very close. It's a risk.
For Westerners anyway, they don't have so much sense of responsibilities in any age. Like, yeah, you know, daughter have to be married. Who care about that?
That's there. But generally, by the third marriage, they start to understand a little bit and be a little bit more gentle and well behaved. They generally are a little more caring for women. But at the same time, it's there. That person, if they don't care, then there still means, how can you not care for women? That means then women are something to be exploited. Right? It means for a Naistika Brahmachari, then women are mother. Women mothers are respected. Therefore, out of respect, they can stay out of the women's way. Right? A man who doesn't have respect for women means he must exploit them. So that means you have to be around women to exploit them. You can't exploit a woman if you're not around them. Right? So therefore, then they can't get away. So even if they say, we don't care, leave this one, go out and this one, then they'll just find someone else. Like that. So that's the problem. So they can't get away from it. It's the way it is. Krishna created it. Therefore, it's better to follow it. Even if one doesn't, one will get fried with it, yes. But it's just at what loss. And what disturbance. You get fried, yes, but how many other people have been fried in the process? You know, how many other families have been fried? You know, so that's the whole thing. Better to follow it. Better to do the duties, do them properly, and then get out of it. But do it with the purpose of becoming free from it, as part of the process of liberation, not as the process of enjoyment.
Is it only saving thing actually for Grihastha to develop more attachment for Krishna than for family members?
Yes, but one does it in the association of family members. Mm-hmm. Means your path is connected with them. Mm-hmm. So your development with them is connected with them. Mm-hmm. You know? That's why then the important thing is the devotional qualities, what is the interest, not whether they're beautiful and, you know, and attractive, and that's secondary. They're beautiful and attractive on the material platform, it's just a symptom of their previous piety. But whether the subtle body is attractive, that's another thing. Then that's also a previous piety, but that's a subtler thing, and most don't look at that. Most women who we call physically attractive in the Western world, their subtle body is not attractive. But because it's just the oppressiveness of lust, then it creates attraction. You know? But it's even seen, even in that sphere, you know, how old are the girls that win all these big beauty pageants? Right? They're very young. 17, 18. Fashion magazines now, many of the models are 14 years old. Because there's a beauty there in their innocence. As soon as they get a little older, older is their subtle body. Indian women, they can be 30, 40 and still look young. Western girls, they can be, I've seen a girl at 11 look old. Just material desires are so intense. She didn't look 11, she looked 19 easily. And then as she got older, when she was 19, then she looked younger. She looked younger at 19 than she did when she was 11. I remember one girl like that. So it's that. But still, that's just the piety. But the thing is if one is one wants to go back to Godhead, therefore one has to see the devotional. What is the purpose? Why does this girl want to get married? Why does the man want to get married? Sense gratification? Security? Women need security, but if that's the only reason to get married, then how that marriage will be good. The goal is, once you got a few things, then you can't be secure, so it will be unending economic development. She wants to get out of the Brahmacharini ashram. Okay, then once she has a house, she's out. Then she doesn't have to take care of the husband or the house, because she's out. Her goal is that. She's attached to children. She just wants the children. Okay, once she's got the children, then she couldn't care less for the husband. So you have to see, what are the goals? It means the goal is to go back to Godhead, but we have these attachments to deal with. Then we will deal with these in Krishna conscious. So husband and wife help each other in dealing with their material needs to come to the Krishna conscious platform.
Maharaja, I found the most difficult thing in Grihastha ashram is like to keep kind of to not be attached for progress of my wife. Like I want to sincerely go, and she wants to sincerely go on this path of purity. But sometimes capacity is different.
That's why
like to have balance and some. I become more pushy actually with her than with anybody else.
No, no.
When I'm dealing with other people, okay, so,
no.
You know, by time, but we are together and like, I cannot...
As long as it helps the relationship, then it's no problem, because husband is guru. But if it's difficult on them, then you must understand the desires and needs of women are more. They're more connected to material energy. They're the form of the material energy. So therefore, husband's guru. If the wife supports the husband, then she gets the same benefits that he gets. Half of the husband's credits go to the wife. None of the wife's credits go to the husband.
That means it's not bad so far. It's going on.
Yes. Main thing is that they're peaceful and engaged in Krishna service. They can go forward more dynamically. Great, but you have to see the speed they can go. Hmm. But they should be humble and sincerely trying to keep up, though they may not be able to keep up. If they say, oh, listen, I'm a woman, I can't do all that, so give me a break, then that kind of woman is, you know, not so good association. You know? But if it's a matter of, you know, you're trying, but, you know, these weaknesses are there, then that's given that support, that kindness is there. You know, that's the thing. Kindness is the thing. Mm. It means you're dealing. If the wife is seen as a junior, then that means kindness. Understand? With equals, it's friendship. With juniors, it's kindness. Mm. Right? To superiors,
yeah,
it's respect. Yeah.
Different
dealings. Yeah. So, but I mean, just even in relationships, the parents are kind to the child. The child respects the parents. Mm. Right? So if the wife is considered in a junior position, then one's business is to be kind to her. Right? But then her position is to respect. Same time as the wife in when it comes to performing religious duties, then she is able to protect, in that way she's like the father. When one is in sickness and other difficulties and anxieties, then she's like the mother. You know, in plans and this and that, she's like the friend. You know, like this. And in her times of weakness, she's the one who receives kindness. So all the rasas are there.
I didn't catch that, sorry, about father, when she's in...
Means father is one who gives birth to the body, uh-huh. One who protects the body, and one who feeds the body. Right? So then, in religious duties, the wife is protecting the husband, because she's keeping his senses in control. You know? And she is playing her part in the process. Therefore, she's like father. Like that. Same time, you know, does that make sense? Same time is because then the husband is protecting the wife and feeding the wife. He's like father. So that's why she must respect him. So all these things are going on. It's a real, real kitchery. You know, all these different rasas are happening at once. That's why it's so emotionally intense. And that's why it's so tricky. Like that. It's very delicate. So if one is always sensitive, the husband and wife are always sensitive, then it will work. They become insensitive or ungrateful or take the other for granted, then it won't work.